Hi, everybody. I'm your host, Carrie Diamond, and you're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb. Each week, we talk to the most interesting women in the world of food and bring the pages of Cherry Bomb magazine to life. Thank you to our sponsor, Emmy, the maker of delicious traditional cheeses from Switzerland, for supporting this season of our podcast. If you love beautiful Swiss cheeses, look for Emmy's premier Kaltbach label. Cheeses such as Emmentaler, Gruyere, and Le Cremeux, aged in the 22-million-year-old Kaltbach cave for superior flavor unlike anywhere else in the world. How's everybody out there? We are live today. We've been on hiatus for a little while, and it feels great to be back. One little message. If you are a friend of Sharon Richardson's, do not tune out. She's the second guest today, so you're just going to have to hang on for a little bit until we talk to her. And before we introduce our first guest, I have a little housekeeping to take care of. We have two Brooklyn events coming up. On Monday night, February 12th, Cherry Bomb and 420 Blackbirds are getting together for a night of pie and conversation. It's taking place at the new 420 Blackbirds location on Dean Street. I would love to see all of you there if you live in New York City. We'll have copies of the Cherry Bomb cookbook for sale, and we would be delighted to sign them for you. Our cookbook and some pie would make a great Valentine's Day present, if I say so myself. I would certainly fall in love with whoever gave that to me. A few of you, like Melissa Uchiyama in Tokyo and Julia's Bites and Beats, asked us on Instagram if we could record this, and we are definitely going to try. I'm going to put DJ Dave on that, and maybe we can broadcast it as a future episode. Then, on Thursday, February 15th, from 5 to 7 p.m., Radio Cherry Bomb is hosting a book signing with Jarell Guy, author of the new cookbook, Black Girl Baking, which just dropped on Tuesday. Congratulations, Jarell. That's a really big deal. The book signing will take place at Smith Canteen, which just happens to be the coffee shop I own in Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn. Come by to meet Jarell, get a copy of her book, and try some of her baked goods. It's going to be a really fun time. Then in March, I'll be at the Charleston Wine and Food Festival, hosting a few events and doing a special live session of Radio Cherry Bomb with a few of our favorite chefs. If you are going to the festival, DM me. It's one of the nicest food... Oh, DM me at Cherry Bomb. That's my Instagram handle. It's one of the nicest food festivals around, and Charleston is such a great food city right now. You should definitely consider going. We had a blast in Charleston in December for our cookbook party with Nikki and Lindsay and Phil, the hosts of F&B Radio. I really can't wait to go back and see everybody. And if you haven't listened to F&B Radio, check out that show. It's one of my favorite podcasts. I just binge listened to all the back episodes the other day and could really not stop laughing. They're hilarious. All right, so without further delay, our next guest is Angela Garbitz, founder of Goldenrod Pastries, a shop in Lincoln, Nebraska. Yes, Angela is here live today, all the way from Lincoln, Nebraska. And her shop caters to those not just with a passion for pastry, a little alliteration there, not just a passion for pastry, but a variety of dietary restrictions. Goldenrod is not your typical pastry shop. It began as a blog, and today is an all-women establishment. When Angela opened the doors, she was the sole employee, but that did not last for long, as she will soon explain. If you want to start drooling or get some baking inspiration, be sure to check out Goldenrod Pastries on Instagram. You are in for a treat. All right, so Angela, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you so much. It's so exciting to be here with you.
We're thrilled to have you here. I mean, I don't think we've ever had a guest from Nebraska, let alone Lincoln, Nebraska.
Happy to represent Nebraska.
Is that where you grew up?
It is, yeah. I'm from Lincoln.
So what was it like growing up in Lincoln, Nebraska?
It's great there. I mean, I grew up in a family where we just ate constantly. Whenever we traveled, we were going grocery shopping to like see what was local to the area, and I love food.
What was your family like? Do you come from a big family, small family? Who cooked? All those.
Everybody cooked. I am half Polish and half Italian, and so I come from a family of food pushers, and I am now a food pusher myself.
That's funny. I've never heard that term before. What was a typical meal at home?
So my mom is Italian, and she did a lot of the cooking. She became the matriarch of our family, our extended family, and she would host a Sunday dinner every week. And she would do steaks and spaghetti just like her great aunt had done, or my great aunt had done when she was growing up. So probably five desserts if we had 10 people, you know.
What were some of the Polish specialties?
So my Polish grandmother would do Polish Christmas Eve every year, and we would do the Feast of Seven Fishes and have fish and...
Wait, explain the Feast of Seven Fishes for those out there who are like, what the heck are they talking about?
Yeah, so we did like a slightly Americanized version of that, and she kind of adjusted that as we were kids to make it something we would eat. But we did lots of different fish and herring, cod. She added Velveeta mac and cheese as time went on to make sure that the kids had something to eat. And boiled potatoes.
And there was no fish in the mac and cheese.
No fish in the mac and cheese, which the kids were really happy about. Yeah, boiled potatoes. We always did like a tort for dessert, but it was something really special that really made us feel connected.
And then how did you, you've been baking since you were 15, right?
I've been baking in kitchens since I was 15 and took a brief hiatus when I worked in international marketing after I graduated college. But it's all I ever wanted to do.
What, how'd you get bit by the baking bug?
I don't remember ever not having the baking bug. I remember just growing up and baking. I think it's a common story for a lot of people who love food to just be attached to the kitchen from day one. And, you know, if we were bored in the evening, my mom would start making chocolate chip cookies, and that would be our activity at 9 o'clock at night. And
if we were bored, we were told to go entertain ourselves.
we would just end up around the island and make cookies. And it was always a way for me to like connect with people because I'm a little bit of an introvert. So if I wanted to get to know people, I would make food and bring it wherever I went. So then people would come to me because I had food. And it was a great way to kind of be social.
So are we talking Toll House recipe, or was your family a little more inventive when it came to the bakers?
Not much more inventive. No, we stuck pretty classic.
So what happened next? So I know you studied at the former French Culinary Institute. How did you make the leap from Nebraska to New York?
So I was studying food science at the University of Nebraska and took the option to take a semester off and come here to New York to study pastry. And it was always my dream. It was always what I wanted to do. And I was lucky to work with some people and make some really good connections that inspired me really to set me off for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Tell us more about your time in New York. Did you stage anywhere? Did you have internships?
Yeah, I worked with Dave Arnold at the French Culinary Institute, who has a great show on the Heritage Radio Network.
We know Dave Arnold very well. He's one of our colleagues here.
So I worked with him in 2008 when molecular gastronomy was like really a big deal, and he was helping a lot of chefs in their kitchens at that time. And one thing that I always think about with Dave is that he wouldn't adopt or help anybody with a technique if it didn't inherently make the food more delicious. And so I always think about that when we're baking and trying to make things gluten-free or vegan or dairy-free. It's like not worth it to make something if you're not making it more delicious. Mm-hmm. I always think about Dave. And I also was at Jean George for a short time.
So what made you go back to Lincoln?
Well, I wanted to finish my bachelor's degree, and I knew that I eventually wanted to open a business, a bakery, and I knew that it would be a little bit more like financially feasible to do it in Nebraska for my situation. And I think that Nebraska is a really special place, and I think that some people consider it like a flyover state, but I have found a lot of happiness there, and I ultimately made the decision to invest myself and my business in a place that feels very special.
Expand on that a little bit, the part about how you found happiness there, because I know some people think that they have to be in a big city,
yeah,
especially if they want to start a business or something like that. What... tell me how the happiness manifested itself.
So Lincoln, Nebraska especially, it's a city of about 250,000 people. And I think it's a very unique city because the people who live there really want to see business owners be successful. So I feel like the city structures itself economically to help business owners succeed. And I feel like the people who live in Lincoln really want to see business owners succeed. So I just think that it's important to be an advocate for places like this that are small, but they allow you to do what you want to do. So I think that, you know, maybe in a bigger city or someplace where the cost of living is a little bit higher, I would have to kind of alter what I want to do and what I'm selling. But I feel like I was able to do exactly what I wanted to do in Lincoln.
I've driven around not the whole entire country, but a fair part of the country. Yeah. And I'm really heartened by all the young women out there opening their own businesses, because I think there really is something that's going on, and people are moving back home, moving to smaller cities where the business environment is more hospitable to someone like you. But the bummer is all the chain restaurants. Oh my gosh, you drive around, there's just so many chain restaurants and they're like pushing these really cheap prices on people. And you're like, God, how do the small businesses succeed when they have to fight this and fight those advertising dollars that those chains have? Is that an issue in Nebraska?
I wouldn't say so. I think that like there's such a strong community of people who want to support small businesses that I don't remember the last time that I even went out, saw a chain restaurant. You know, you have your path that you take and you have the places that you go. And I think that you can live a very happy life in Nebraska without having to frequent those or have them become a problem for your business. So,
well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
So you move back, you start this blog,
yes.
You discover you have some dietary restrictions, you start making your own baked goods to, you know, so that you can eat kind of what you want. And your blog kind of takes off.
Yeah.
And your blog becomes a bakery that most bloggers just continue blogging.
Yeah. So I felt it's almost like when you start a blog as somebody who's like I said, a little bit introverted, it's like almost feels a little vain to tell people about yourself and talk about what you're doing. And so I finally worked up the courage to start sharing my posts just on my personal Facebook page. And I realized that people actually did care.
So you were like blogging in secret?
Oh, I was blogging in secret big time. Yeah.
So it was like a diary.
Yeah. I mean, I knew that
today I made gluten-free brownies.
Exactly. I knew that eventually one day I would want to publish it, but I didn't really know when that would be or how that would be. And so eventually one day I just said, fine, whatever. I'm just going to publish this. And people actually cared and were reading it. And I started taking orders. And I was working my full-time job and also baking 40 or 50 hours a week. And
what was your full-time job?
I was working for a biotechnology company in international marketing. So
just that.
I wasn't like fully fulfilled, obviously, which is why I started blogging. Mm. And
did you have recipes in the earliest blog post?
Wow. Yeah. So if you go back onto our website, and if you're somebody who wants to be dairy free or vegan or needs to be, you can find a lot of really great recipes on our website that I published from like 2013 to 2015.
And did those become the basis of the bakery, the pastry shop?
Yeah, a little bit. They've evolved a lot since then, but I still refer people to those recipes all the time.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I laughed at one of the things. One of your posts is like a Q&A someone did with you. And when you started the bakery, you thought you would only need one employee, and that one employee was you.
Yep.
And you said that was a very naive assumption on your part. So tell us about those early days.
I mean, all I wanted to do was bake. I wanted to feed people. I'm like I said, a food pusher. I just wanted to feed people and make food. And I hadn't considered like that it would actually be successful. Like I knew within myself that it would be successful, but it was hard to imagine what that success really meant. And we were slammed from the first day. And we're selling out every day. And so,
tell me about that first day. I can't even imagine.
Yeah. So I decided to structure it as like a Facebook event. And so I did an opening party for like 5 hours one night on a Saturday. And I just published that one night, and we had like 1,000 or 2,000 people who RSVP'd to it. And so I have a tiny little like 800 square foot space, and I was the only employee. And it's like, oh, I'm sure they won't all come. Well, I think that pretty much all of them came. And so we had a line down the block for the entire 4-hour period. I think we sold out after like 3 hours, but my husband was ringing up customers, my sister was folding boxes, my mom was refilling the case, my dad was greeting people and keeping them occupied. And I said, wow, I think we like might have something here.
Oh my gosh, I have goosebumps just thinking about that first day.
And it was that way from the second we opened for the next several months.
Okay, so day two, you're like, clearly we need to hire some people.
I waited like 3 weeks, and I was the only employee for the first 3 weeks. And then actually my husband,
did you sleep?
Not much. No. And my husband's sister is a classically trained French pastry chef. And so I texted her one day and I said, I am going to die. I would really love it if you would come and help me. And she's been with me since then.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you're lucky you have a sister-in-law who's a classically trained French pastry chef.
Yeah,
not everyone has that.
Really lucky.
So, oh my gosh. So how long ago was that? When did you open the pastry shop?
Yeah, I opened in May 2015.
Okay. So your 3-year anniversary is coming up.
Yes.
What have you learned in those 3 years?
I have more than anything learned how valuable my team is. I mean, going back to starting as the only employee, I have a really, really amazing group of people that I work with, group of women. And I have found a lot of strength from working with all women. And especially, I would say after the election, I feel like the strength and safety that I feel within that group has been transformative for me personally. And as a business, I think your teams come and go, but I have learned to really, really value when I have a team that's strong as I do right now.
And the fact that it's all women, as wonderful as that is not 100% on purpose.
No, I'm not excluding men. I just, it's happened to all be women. And
you told the local newspaper that, the reason that it's all women is because men don't apply for the jobs.
I would have had one man apply and I was going to interview him, but he found employment before we could interview.
So accidentally all women.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really, really special team.
All right. So if I were to walk into Goldenrod today.
Yes.
Oh, and tell us, DJ Dave asked if Goldenrod was a Star Wars reference. And I was like, what does that mean?
Because I'm a very cool guy.
Well, no,
I'm
so cool.
I love Star Wars, and I didn't even get the reference, but apparently it's what Han Solo would call C-3PO.
Yeah.
We need a little nerd alert sound effect when we start talking about Star Wars. But
yeah,
anyway.
I'll work on that.
Okay. But that is not why you named it Goldenrod.
No. Goldenrod is the state flower of Nebraska. And yeah, it's an important part of where we are and what we're doing.
So all us non-Nebraskans learned a little something today. If I were to walk into Goldenrod today, what would be in the pastry case?
Well, our newest fan favorite is a Fluffernutter cookie sandwich, which is definitely my jam. So it's 2 peanut butter cookies and marshmallow buttercream with like, it's slathered in like just straight up peanut butter in the center as well. You'll see crumble buns, which I brought you some of those today. It's Goldenrod original. It's rolled up like a cinnamon roll without cinnamon. Then we put homemade preserves or curd in the middle with coconut oil crumble. Those are my two favorites, but we'd also have like pound cakes, cheesecake, tarts, all of that good stuff.
You also happen to be a social media whiz. You have a fantastic Instagram account.
Oh, thank you so much.
And if you really want to drool, you have to check out the Instagram account.
Thank you.
I mean, the brownies with the, are they frosted?
Yeah.
They look so good.
Big time, yeah.
The brownies are frosted and they've got all these colorful sprinkles on them. Do you do cakes to order?
We do, yeah. We do a ton of custom order cakes and you can see those on our social media as well. We try to keep it really like vibrant and fresh. We only use buttercream and fresh flowers and I want people to feel very like at ease when they're experiencing Goldenrod. I want this to be something that is very joyful for them.
Do you have seats there as well?
We do. Yeah. We seat about 15 at a time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's great. And who does the social media? Is it you?
I do. And I also, since I'm gone this week, I have, a marketing intern who's helping out and, one of my employees, Maggie, is also a social media whiz. So she helps as well.
So how do you juggle? I mean, this is your first time running a big team like this,
yeah.
Running a bakery / pastry shop, doing all these things. And you're pretty, I don't know how old you are, but just looking at you, I know you're pretty young. How do you juggle all this?
I love Goldenrod so much and I will do whatever I have to do to make it be what I want it to be. And it never feels rough. I have an amazing team. Like I am so, so thankful. So I work really hard and I love it.
Now, my first thought when I looked at your Instagram was, this woman needs a cookbook. Do you have a cookbook? Are you working on a cookbook yet?
I hope so, yeah. It's definitely something that I want to be
doing.
Have
you started to meet with people?
A little.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I know we have some agents and cookbook people who listen to the show, so
thank you.
Need to meet Angela quickly before somebody else snaps her up.
Thank you. Yeah, I would love to do a cookbook.
Who are some of your heroes out in the pastry world and the baking world?
Well, actually, I just stopped by Superiority Burger and talked to Brooks Headley a little bit and told him I was coming here. He said to tell you hi.
Oh, we love Brooks.
When I went through his cookbook for the first time, I just felt like very at ease because it was somebody who comes from such like a formal place, but he took such a like not casual, but just really like approachable point of view for pastry. So
for those of you out there who don't know who Brooks is, Brooks Headley used to be the head pastry chef at Del Posto in New York City, award-winning guy, quit at the top of his game and opened his own vegetarian burger place in the East Village. It is the tiniest shop. I think it's on like ninth. And the veggie burgers are my favorite veggie burgers on the planet.
So good.
And they've got incredible sides with stuff he gets directly from the farmer's market at Union Square. I don't know if they do gelato and sorbetto year round. Do they?
They did today. Yeah. Oh, I had a nectarine sorbet and coconut ice cream. It was insane.
Yeah. He's so talented. He's also just a very cool guy and a good friend of Cherry Bomb. So it's nice to see him succeeding.
I just thought of this. I remember in, I think, 2007, there was a big New York Times article on Sam Mason and Alex Stupak. And I think there was another guy in there. But I was just, you know, a young girl, 20-year-old girl in Nebraska. And I remember seeing this. And I didn't have any posters of, like, heartthrobs on my walls. But that went up on my wall. I was like, Sam Mason, Alex Stupak. I was like, these guys, they're doing it.
Wait, I know who Alex Stupak is. I shouldn't admit this. Tell me who Sam Mason is again.
Sam Mason.
It's like, if it's a guy, it's honestly like I've been so fixated on
I should only be talking about women.
Scene. I know.
I feel awful.
It's okay. You're allowed to talk about guys. Who's Sam again? I hope he's not listening. Or any of his friends.
He owns Oddfellows now. And Oddfellows Ice Cream, and he and Empire Mayo, and he worked for Wiley Dufresne.
Oh, Empire Mayo. Okay.
And he had Taylor. Empire Mayo. Yeah.
Okay.
But I just remember being so impressed by them. But obviously there are so many women. Like Nigella Lawson's books, like I know it's like she's such a classic. I just love her How to Be a Domestic Goddess. It was one of my first cookbooks that really impacted me.
She's incredible.
She's amazing.
So what brings you to New York?
Well, I wanted to see you.
Uh-huh.
And eating, of course. So, yeah, that's it.
So where have you been eating?
Well, I got in at 1:30 last night, so I haven't done much. I went to Zucker Bakery.
You look very fresh for having gotten in that late. But I think it might be that sparkly eyeshadow, which is so dazzling. I can barely take my eyes away from it.
Thank you.
From it.
And Superiority Burger. And then we'll see what I get into tonight, hoping to get some really good Polish food. Hit Koreatown.
Mm-hmm. What else? How long are you here for?
I leave on Saturday morning.
Okay. So if anybody has any recommendations for Angela, you can just DM her or
send me all your DMs.
Post it on her Instagram.
It changes so quickly in New York, and it's hard to keep up with everything that I should be eating and seeing and doing. I always go to the places that have like the most sentimental value to me from when I lived here. So I'm way ready for your recommendations.
Cool. So send those her way. All right. What else? Anything else that's happening in the Goldenrod world? Or
Goldenrod is rocking and rolling. We're just making really beautiful, delicious stuff. I'm so excited for Fat Tuesday next week, Valentine's Day, two of my favorite days.
Ooh, what do you have for Valentine's Day at Goldenrod?
Well, if I can answer Fat Tuesday, I'm gonna pretend that you asked
Fat Tuesday.
Fat Tuesday is one of our favorite days at the store because we do a Swedish semla, which is like a cardamom bun that we do like a coconut oil cardamom bun. And then you hollow out the center. And traditionally it has marzipan and cardamom whipped cream, but we do just a bunch of marzipan in the middle of the bun. And then we do a raspberry coconut cream, and then you put the top back on the bun. And so it's just like this really amazing thing that our customers just wish we had year round, but one day a year makes it more special. And Valentine's Day is just kind of like a chocolate free-for-all. It's just macaroons, chocolate cake. It's always a madhouse.
Yum. Yum. Oh, fantastic. And we have to give a shout-out to... Who are you supposed to give a shout-out to?
Oh my gosh.
Wandering Whisk.
Oh, yeah! Jen! Hi! Yeah.
Jen, you can find Jen at Wandering Whisk. She is a great baker. Where's her shop again? She's in Florida, right?
Yes, she is. So
St. Pete,
St. Pete, Florida. Uh-huh. And she is an internet friend of both of us, and she came to Nebraska in September, I believe, to check out Goldenrod with her really sweet mom, and we had a great time talking about bakeries and food and being a woman in this industry.
I love when you meet your Instagram friends in
real
life.
I know. It's like such a kind of heartwarming thing.
I love her cakes. First off, I'm like a total buttercream freak, so I think she does a lot with buttercream. But her color combinations are fantastic.
Totally.
When you look at it, it's like turquoises and lemons and limes and fuchsias, and they aren't colors you see in cakes that often.
No, it's just like shocking to your eyes in the best way. I love it.
Absolutely. Well, this would be the world's best road trip, but to go like hit all the bakers and pastry people who you're pals with out across the country on Instagram. Maybe we can turn that into a cherry bomb story one day.
I would love to take my team, or we have some people that we are internet friends with that I'd love to just head out on the road with my bakers and hang out at all their little shops.
Well, maybe we can make that happen. But yeah, then who would staff Goldenrod?
That would be fine for a few days.
All right. Well, Angela, thank you so much for joining us. We just wish you all the success
in
the world.
Thank you
so much. And I really hope you're back here in a few years talking about your cookbook.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. We are going to take a quick break, and we will be right back with Sharon Richardson. It's time for a quick cheese lesson from our friends at Emmy, the makers of traditional, delicious cheeses from Switzerland. Do you know about Emmentaler? Of course you do. This is the original Swiss cheese, world famous for its distinctive holes and extraordinary flavor. Emmy's special Kaltbach Emmentaler AOP is cave-aged in Emmy's 22-million-year-old natural sandstone cave to produce an earthy, intense nuttiness and herbaceous woodiness. Whether you're snacking or party planning, serve your Emmentaler with dried apricots, rosemary sprigs, caramelized onions, or bacon, and pair it with black tea or an oaked Chardonnay, a Cabernet Sauvignon, or gin and tonic. Look for the red and blue Emmy logo at your favorite local grocer. Hey, Bomb Squad. Visit the Cherry Bomb online shop for all things Bomb Squad. We've got signed copies of the Cherry Bomb cookbook, which features more than 100 recipes from 100 of the coolest women in food. Need a great gift? How about a gift subscription to Cherry Bomb magazine? And we've got those collabs, like our Headley and Bennett apron. Visit cherrybomb.com for more. We are live in the studio right now with Sharon Richardson. So all you Sharon Richardson fans out there who are listening, you are about to hear from her. Sharon is an activist and an advocate for the formerly incarcerated. She is the CEO and founder of Just Soul Catering in Brooklyn and the re-entry coordinator for Steps to End Family Violence in Harlem. In 2015, she launched Re-entry Rocks, a small nonprofit organization that helps formerly incarcerated individuals who are victims of domestic violence. We are very excited to welcome Sharon Richardson to Radio Cherry Bomb for the first time.
I am so happy to be here, and thank you for having me.
We are so happy to have you here. I'm going to have you scoot a little closer to the mic so everybody can hear you. You are a busy woman.
Yes, I am. Every day.
Thank you for
taking 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night, maybe.
Thank you for taking the time to be on air. People might recognize your name and your story because you're in the new issue of Cherry Bomb, but because, you know, we're all in Brooklyn, we thought it would be fun to meet you in person and hear more about your story, which is really incredible. You were incarcerated yourself for 20 years and came out of prison and decided that you wanted to help women who are like you and give back.
Yes.
So tell me how you came up with the idea for Just Soul Catering.
So when I came home in 2010, like my pastor always says, your feet hit the ground and you took off running and have not stopped yet. I got involved with a lot of different projects, and one of them was the Vagina Monologues. So I participated in Vagina Monologues. That's a play that Eve Ensler had written, and I got involved with this big project. And one of the producers said to me, you know, we were just sitting around kicking the breeze talking, and she was like, "You ever thought about being an entrepreneur?" And I was like, "Yeah, I have." But and so she says, "You should check out this nonprofit organization that helps formerly incarcerated individuals become entrepreneurs." So the name of that place is Defy Ventures. So I was like, "This can't be possible." So I checked it out, and I still wasn't convinced. And so I contacted her.
You didn't think Defy Ventures was legit?
No, I was like, you know, this just can't be real. So I got online, I applied, put all my information in, told a friend of mine, we did it together, we went for the interview, and we both got accepted. And so I was like, wow, this is really real. So I was part of Defy Ventures for a pretty long time, from 2015 moving forward. I graduated in December of 2016, I believe it was. Actually, it might have been sooner than that. I might have the dates a little bit off. But
so why a food business?
So this is the thing. So when I got into Defy Ventures, they asked you, "So what is your business?" So I looked at my friend and I was like, "What am I doing?" So she was like, "Well, I'm going to do t-shirt business." And I'm like, "Okay." Well, she was like, "Well, think of something that you love." And I was like, "Well, I love cooking and I love people. When you put the two together, you get a catering business." So at first I was really, really thinking about doing a food truck, and, you know, but then we did some research and found out that it was just too much involved. So one of the guys that work at Defy said, "Well, why don't you start small and start with a catering business?" And so I was like, wow. So when people ask me, you know, like, why food? I often tell them the story about when I was incarcerated and my mom had had a stroke, and they had taken me out to her bedside visit to actually say goodbye to her. And I thought about, you know, all that that meant. And when I came back to the facility where I was incarcerated at, all my friends had stayed up, and they had cooked food and desserts, and I just couldn't believe it. We all sat down together, and I shared my visit with my mom, and we cried and talked and cried. We ate food, and I said, you know what? Food is really, really a strong element that reaches the soul and can change any mood, right? And why not food? And why not soul food? And that's the reason why I chose food and soul food. So that's how Just Soul came to be.
That's amazing. Now, you decided to take it one step further, but you would hire formerly incarcerated women to work at Just Soul.
Right. So Just Soul Catering is a justice-involved social enterprise. We thrive on the barriers that formerly incarcerated women have when they come home, and that's getting a job. Mm-hmm. And so my interview on the first page of my website speaks into that and speaks about how I just need to know if you can take a spoon and stir it around in that mix. I need to know that you can open up that oven and pull out that macaroni and cheese. I need to know that you can tell your story to those that have hired us about why you've joined Just So. And you're hired. I don't see.
So you don't have. You don't need to really be a great cook. You're willing to teach them.
Yes. So speaking about teaching them, so one of the things that I'm working on moving forward is creating a sister entity between Reentry Rocks and Just Soul Catering, and part of that is going to be a culinary school, and we are going to actually. I have one of my great cooks who I just recently hired, and she's going to be in charge of teaching these women in three different phases what it means to become an entrepreneur, to ask yourself if this is what you want to do and why the food industry. And then she's going to have classes where she actually teaches them certain dishes. They'll be able to actually have hands-on with certain events. They'll get the experience of going out and shopping and, you know, what it is to book an event, what it is to market an event, and graduate after 9 months. And then hopefully, if they want to go into their own business, they could actually go to Defy. You know, so I'm hoping to work out some type of a linkage agreement with them so they can actually go to Defy and graduate and have their own business.
That's
so
incredible.
Yeah.
Have you had alumni already from Just Soul who've graduated and gone on to other jobs?
No. So this is something that we are creating and moving forward. So we just finished our huge grant. We actually got it in to, you know, a possible person that will, you know, actually make this happen. And then we are actually looking for other people to actually donate to Reentry Rocks so that we can actually do this culinary program with Just So Catering and make this happen. So everything is in writing, black and white. It's all mapped out. I'm ready for my interviews. I'm ready to go in and pitch this thing and make it happen because it's going to be a success.
I have no doubt. Absolutely. Now, tell us about Just Soul Catering. Let's talk about the fun part for a second, the food.
Okay.
Because when I read through your menu, I was like, oh my God, I'm dying. Like the macaroni and cheese, the mini macaroni and cheeses, the collards, the sweet potato pancakes, the wings, all these things. Tell us what the most popular dishes are.
Okay, so the most popular dishes is one is the macaroni and cheese. People just die for this macaroni and cheese. So I put 5 cheeses into this macaroni and cheese. We use heavy cream. We use everything that makes this macaroni and cheese rich. People say, to me sometimes, oh, your macaroni and cheese is a little bit expensive. And I says, listen, let me sit down with you and tell you what kind of love went into this macaroni and cheese. And then they understand it. One of the other dishes that people love is the banana pudding. And I got this recipe from a really, really good friend of mine who always made the banana pudding, and I was like, you gotta make me some banana. And she was like, you know what, girl, it's time for you to start making this banana pudding on your own. So I took it from her and I made it my own. I put some ingredients in it and turned that thing around. And so now we're making all flavors, coconut, strawberry, peanut butter. We're making whatever you want with this banana pudding. We're making it happen. So, then we started doing some vegan dishes. My mentor is vegan and she's like, you got to start learning how to serve the population who doesn't eat all that, soul food. So we started doing some vegan dishes and, making it happen for those that are vegan. And we just added on a Caribbean menu.
Ooh,
and
what's on the Caribbean menu?
So the Caribbean menu has curry goat, curry chicken, cook up peas and rice. We have lo mein. This girl can cook. She can throw down. So yeah, we're going to make it happen with the Caribbean menu. And then some other things will actually come into place as we grow. We are looking forward to Just So growing and our menu just being more richer and more appetizing to those people that we love to feed in New York City.
So how can people hire Just Soul?
So people can go on the website and go to the booking page. After they've gone through the menu and seen all the delicious foods, you can go straight to the booking page and just write out your event. Give me a phone number. Tell me how many people, the date, the time, where I'm supposed to be. And that actually comes straight to my email, thejustsoulnyc@gmail.com. That comes straight to the email. And once I open that up, I call the person. I talk with them over the phone. I create a draft invoice, send it to them with the menu on it. And then we work back and forth because some agencies have budgets and, some people can't afford to pay a certain thing. So they'll let me know what's available. And we work it out. We make it happen. Just So Catering is an up-close and personal family, not just a Justice and Bar, but a family, a loving catering business. And that's what sets us apart. That's what makes Just So, so different. And what warms my heart is that, like last night, this young lady sent me a submission form for an event. And I just happened to ask her, how did you find out about it? She says, well, I just went on the website and just typed in some catering businesses in Brooklyn and yours came up. And when I read the mission and looked at the video, it just warmed my heart. Like she's totally not associated with the justice, involvement. But she said, just because of what I read and what I saw, I want you guys to cater our event.
And you do a wide range of events. Like I know you've done street fairs all the way to movie sets.
Yes, we've done street fairs, one of which is at Bayview, the old Bayview Correctional Facility over there by Chelsea Pier. The Novo, N-O-V-O Foundation purchased that building. And every year since the purchase, and I believe we've done 2 events, they've set up a whole block party where they invite the neighborhood to come around and just meet people like myself and meet the workers and hear the stories and know what it is that's coming into their neighborhood. And so we go out there and we cook for 600 and 700 people and just warm people's heart with our food. And then actually one of the filming producers who is working with them actually hired me, and she actually started speaking about Just So Catering to other film places, and they've been hiring us. And let me tell you something, being a film caterer is no joke. It is really, really hard work. We talking about getting up at 2-3 o'clock in the morning and making sure that delivery is there for 6 o'clock for their breakfasts, and then going back and taking them lunch and sometimes dinner.
I was going to say, working on a movie set probably sounds more glamorous than it actually is.
And listen, bags under your eyes and just sitting there. But you know, it's an amazing journey that I have been on. It's been an amazing journey with the workers. I appreciate my staff. I appreciate the people that work with me. I mean, the mission is, it goes without saying, but just the whole idea of what it is that we're doing, and including the storytelling, it's just so amazing.
Now, this love of food and people and hospitality, does that go back to your upbringing? You were raised in Bed-Stuy, mm-hmm. and your family is West Indian?
Yes. So it does go back to my upbringing. My grandmother, I think about how she just loved being in the kitchen, and she loved food and she loved people. And because my family was West Indian and we had all people coming over, you know, all the time. My father was Trinidadian, so he had the steel band going on down the basement, and it was always plenty, plenty of food. I mean, they were drinking, but it was plenty of food. And so I learned to be able to share in that moment what it means to have food and have people, you know, in your space and know what that means. So, but I want to also attribute it to, you know, the whole hospitality piece, to being also incarcerated. I didn't work in the kitchen while I was incarcerated, but I know what it means to be on the other side serving people. And some of the people that I've hired have worked in the kitchen, you know, while we were, you know, all incarcerated, and what it means to be able to fix that plate and send it over and somebody just saying, you know, could you please just put a scoop more, you know, not knowing that that was breaking the rules, but they did, you know. So we learned that hospitality from inside, on how to treat people and love people through food. Mm-hmm. And the way the food tastes, reaching people in their stomachs, like, it, there's just no other way to do it but right. And that's what we do at Just So Catering.
Now, Sharon, you were in prison for 20 years.
Yes.
And you radiate so much optimism and power, really. How did you not lose your spirit?
Oh, so I was heavily involved in the church when I was incarcerated, and the two pastors that I was under, they were amazing individuals, and they just made sure that all their teachings were correct, and they made sure that all their teachings were to empower us. And I took a class called CPE, which is Clinical Pastoral Education, and I just believe that if that class is available for all over the world, that everyone should at least do one unit. I did 4 units of that. I was 1 unit away from actually getting my chaplaincy. And CPE actually taught me about myself. It taught me about people. It taught me about how being humble. It taught me about responsibility. It taught me about love and passion. And I believe that my spirituality kept me grounded, and that's what saved me from the anger and the suffering that I did experience, mm-hmm. you know, being incarcerated, being away from my family and my children. So,
and
yeah.
being a domestic violence victim
yeah.
and that resulting
yeah.
in your incarceration.
Right.
Which is so unfair.
It really, really is. You know, I'm part of the Corrections Association and all that. That means, you know, I go up to Albany, you know, when I can, and speak about, you know, the laws that should be passed for, you know, being a domestic violence victim. I speak about my story and my incarceration, and how that took me to a place in my life where I could have been angry, you know, up until now. But I really, really embraced the whole idea around the preservation of life and what actually took place between myself and my abuser, and, you know, life moving forward, and all of the pain and suffering that, you know, was caused from this relationship, and how my children suffered because of a choice that I made. So I'm huge on, you know, taking responsibility, you know, and it's really, really hard sometimes, because as a domestic violence victim and the whole cycle of abuse, it can be easily said, well, oh, that person deserved what they got. Look what they did to you. I really, really look at it in a different level, and I take that very seriously.
So now that you are out of prison and running your multiple companies, you decided that you wanted to give back and help other people who were facing what you faced when you got out of prison. So tell me what it's like for a woman who gets out of prison, who's trying to find a job, and is just facing discrimination after discrimination.
Right. So someone coming home from prison, and this doesn't have to be just a woman. It could be a male mm-hmm. person also.
But do you only hire women?
Women right now. Mm-hmm. Because we're trying to empower women, and women sometimes always fall by the wayside. So right now we're just trying to create a women-based organization. But it's really, really difficult when you come home and you have a certain crime, especially a violent crime. And when you go for an interview, you may have all of the qualifications. You can have your associate's degree, your bachelor's degree, your master's degree. And this company may, in fact, really, really want you. And then they do a background check. And they found out that you've been incarcerated. And what happens then is that they don't hire you. And this can happen over and over and over again. And it bothers me, and it bothers a lot of us who are activists in this area. And, you know, we have really, really fought to make people understand how, you know, this is a discrimination against those who've done their time, who've come home, who want to give back, who have these great abilities to be able to offer a company something that they have and not given the chance. So Just So Catering believes in second chances. And, you know, we believe that although the interviews are done one by one, that yes, we may hear some things that are uncomfortable, but we are willing to give a woman a chance today. And that's the reason why that's so important.
And what is it that's changed? I feel like you hear a lot more about helping the formerly incarcerated and helping them with jobs programs and reentry programs. Why is the public's thinking on that changed?
So I think that let me go back a little bit. So I've been home.
Let me just throw in one more question. I mean, I think there's a lot more information now about mass incarceration of people and the unfairness of all of that. Is it all these things combined?
Right. I think that it is all combined. And going back to like when I first came home, because I've been home almost 8 years, I can remember what it was like around the time that I got arrested, opposed to all of the things that I've heard while I was incarcerated about all of the fine people that were out and doing all these great things. And then I came home, and then I got to actually experience it myself. And I think that what's happening now is that more of our stories are getting out. Right? More of us are stepping up to the platform with a mic in front of us and going to these different events and seminars and going up to Albany and going to Washington and speaking truth, which is that we were incarcerated. We accept responsibility for what we've done. We're home now. We're trying to make a difference moving forward. We want to come home, pay our taxes, get a job, get a place to live. I mean, that's a whole nother thing too, as far as housing is concerned. Huge barrier. People cannot live in certain places. You can't go and buy a co-op if you wanted to, because you have to sit before a board. They're going to do a background check. And then once that comes back, that's it. I've had that experience. Unfortunately, since I've been home, I lost my dad's home. And I, like my clients now, were out there at some point looking for an apartment. And although I had a job and a part-time job, although I had a business, I had a good credit, right? A little money saved up. I would go fill out the application and then told that you spend all this money now, right? To get this whole application process done, you have to do the pay yourself for the credit, the background check credit. And then they send you a letter saying that they can't accept you. So it's really, really hard, both getting a job and finding housing. But things have changed. But are we where we want to be? Not yet. I think we still have some more pushing to do. We still have some more mindset changing that we have to do. And I think that more of us who are coming home really, really have to, you know, step up to the plate and just do what we have to do. We have to pull together and just make people see that we are human and that we're forgiven. Please don't judge us and give us that second chance, and we will prove to you, you know, who we are. And yes, there's going to be that one that falls by the wayside, but that happens in regular life also. I mean, look at what's going on right now, and these people have never been incarcerated, you know, so judgment goes far, you know. And I think that I'm tired of hearing that, oh, because you were formerly incarcerated and this is why the doors are being closed in your face. What about people who've never been incarcerated? What about them? You know, so I think that it's just time. And as long as this movement movement is going on to change mass incarceration. I want to be a part of it.
And that's where organizations like yours, Reentry Rocks, comes into play.
Absolutely. Reentry Rocks. And also I work for Edwin Gould Services, Steps to End Family Violence.
Oh, yeah. We didn't talk about Steps.
Yeah. Tell so I'm them. So that's my full-time job, actually. I do catering, although it's really, really taken over my life. I am the reentry coordinator for Steps to End Family Violence. And I got that job when I first came home. The wonderful, legendary woman, Sister Mary Nerney, who has recently passed, she always wanted someone who was formerly incarcerated to run her reentry program. And I got hired into that position when I came home in 2010. And as a reentry coordinator and working with formerly incarcerated individuals, that's what prompted me to get my own organization, Reentry Rocks. And I think the whole element that involves storytelling and being able to tell your story one to another who's coming home and they see that you're doing well gives them and empowers them and gives them the ability to be able to move forward just like myself. So we run groups at Steps to End Family Violence. I also work for Healing Communities Network, which is an organization, nonprofit organizations that helps a lot of families that have formerly incarcerated individuals. And so I go and I run these support groups and I help them through my experience, through my storytelling of what it is to actually be incarcerated. A lot of these families have fears surrounding those loved ones that are incarcerated and they want to know stuff that people don't tell them. I do. I don't hold back. I give, you know, these families and the group members all that it is that they need, you know, to be able to, have a peaceful night.
Well, Sharon, you are remarkable.
Thank you.
I really appreciate you coming on the show to share your story with us. You heard Sharon talk about Just Soul Catering. If you need a caterer for anything,
go to the website.
Go to justsoulcatering.com and check it out. She will work within your budget, and she will serve you some of that amazing food that she talked about. We're going to sit around and eat some cheese because we have our new sponsor, Emmy. There are only 3 cheeses on that plate. I know you do 5 cheese macaroni, so I feel like I'm not quite showing you the hospitality I should have showed.
That's okay.
But next time you come here, I'm going to have 6 cheeses.
All right. Maybe the next time I come, I'll bring you some macaroni and cheese and some banana pudding.
That is macaroni and cheese is like my favorite food group, so I would never say no to that. But I hope you come back on the show and talk more. And as you get Reentry Rocks and your culinary training program off the ground.
Yes.
We would love to hear more about that.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me.
So thanks for coming out when you're so busy. All right. Before we go, don't forget our Brooklyn events. Check out our Instagram account for more details. And speaking of jobs, if any of you are looking for jobs, we have 2 job listings to tell you about. The St. Jane Hotel in Chicago is looking for an executive chef. If you are interested in learning more, DM them on Instagram. And Smith Canteen, my place in Carroll Gardens, is looking for a baker. You can DM me at Carrie Baum or DM Smith Canteen for more information. That's it for today's show. Thank you to our sponsor, Emmy, the maker of delicious traditional cheeses from Switzerland, including the Kaltbach cave-aged Emmentaler, Gruyere, and Le Cremeux. Thank you to our engineer, Dave Tatasciore, and to the band Tra La La for our theme song. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Heritage Radio Network and Cherry Bomb Magazine. We record our podcast each week in a shipping container in the back of Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I kid you not. We'd love it if you could leave a review of Radio Cherry Bomb on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, and now Spotify. Let us know who you'd like to hear on a future episode. Thanks for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.
I'm Ellen Bennett, the founder and CEO of Headley & Bennett. You know who I think is the bomb? Daniela Soto Ines. She's the chef and partner at Atla & Cosme in New York. and I love her because not only is she a badass, she's kind and generous all at the same time. Plus, she's a bridesmaid at my wedding this year, so I love her for that too.
Radio Cherry Bomb is powered by Simplecast. Simplecast is a popular hosting and analytics platform that allows podcasters to easily host and publish to apps like Apple Podcasts. If you have a podcast or are looking to create your very first, check it out. Try it for free and save half off your first 3 months at simplecast.com/heritage.